The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
More data out on the remarkable year 2023 was for organized labor, a raise for fast food workers in the state of California. And today on the show, the Ohio AFL-CIO, the News Guild on Artificial Intelligence in Journalism, and the labor reporter from the Huffington Post. Welcome to the Tuesday, April 2nd edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have a total of three guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with a longtime regular. That would be Tim Berga, who is president of the Ohio AFL-CIO website, ohioaflcio.org. And we'll get the latest on citizens, not politicians. This is what organized labor and many in the state of Ohio are doing right now, collecting signatures to get this issue on the November ballot, which would essentially put an end to gerrymandering in the state of Ohio. Very similar legislation has passed in other states. Simply put, this would create a 15-member commission. No politicians. If you were elected years ago, you're not allowed on this commission. Five Democrats, five Republicans, five independents. That's how it's going to work once it gets passed. And hopefully that'll happen later this year. Tim will give us an update on the collection of signatures. There is a website you might want to go to, unionstrongohio.com, and he'll mention that coming up in a few minutes. Ohio lawmakers, what are they doing? Not very much. The current General Assembly had the fewest number of bills during a single legislative session in more than 40 years. Right now, 19 bills have passed since the beginning of last year. Normally, in a two-year cycle, you're looking at around 230, 240 bills. So what's going on, or what's not going on? Tim will talk about that, and he's also going to talk about the labor political agenda, the endorsement process. This is a big election year, presidential year. Tim is going to spell out how they handle those endorsements and how they interview the candidates, find out who is worker-friendly, who's not worker-friendly. John Schloss will be joining us as our second guest on the show. He is president of the News Guild, CWA. We're going to talk about a letter that was sent last week to the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, urging Congress to ensure that workers are protected by any legislation addressing artificial intelligence. Now, the News Guild, along with the Writers Guild of America East, the Writers Guild of America West, and NABIT, National Association of Broadcast Employees and Technicians, all signed off on this letter. And one of the things, and John will talk about this, they want to make sure they codify workers' rights to bargain collectively over AI policy in the workplace. So this letter specifically urges Congress to more or less protect journalists, along with film, TV writers, creative workers. And artificial intelligence right now is pretty much a runaway freight train. Got to slow it down. It can be incorporated. You can use it as a tool, but not replace people. And right now, there's companies like Google that are scouring up articles written by journalists and then regurgitating them. So John will talk about that, also give us an update on any strikes in media. There's a couple that he's going to reference. Dave Jamieson, he too will talk a bit about artificial intelligence. Dave has been the labor reporter for the Huffington Post since 2011. He's an award-winning journalist, and I tell you, he's got a couple of really interesting stories to talk about. Number one, the Georgia State Legislature has passed a bill that would bar companies from receiving state subsidies if they voluntarily, key word is voluntarily, recognize a union through card check. Now, it's gone to the governor. The governor says he's going to sign it. And this is legislation, no surprise here. It was drafted and promoted by ALEC. Remember that organization? They're still around. American Legislative Exchange Council. Staunch conservatives, started by the Koch brothers years ago. And there's some question whether or not these laws may be preempted by federal labor law. But according to Dave, other states have already tried this. Tennessee, for one. I think Alabama's looking in it. But it's just basically another attack on unions. Another attack on unions. The other story is Waffle House. This is mind-boggling. The union that's organizing Waffle House workers filed a petition with the Labor Department asking them to investigate the chain's policy of deducting mandatory meal costs from workers' paychecks, even if they don't eat the meal. They take at least $3 for each on-shift meal out of workers' pay. This has been going on for quite some time, and the Labor Department is investigating this. Hopefully they're investigating it. Dave Jamieson will be our last guest here on America's Workforce for today. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You could find more at boydwatterson.com. Bloomberg Law's quarterly union wage data report shows that new contracts signed last year by a number of unions have resulted in the highest average first-year wage increase since 1988, when tracking began. On average, union workers will earn 6.6% more this year as a result of those contracts, and 7.3% more when lump sum payments like signing bonuses are included. Now, this report comes on the heels of another recent analysis of Federal Reserve and Bureau of Labor Statistics data conducted by the Center for American Progress, which found a wealth gap between union and non-union households. Now, that study found that unionized workers make about 10 up to 20% more than their non-union peers. The benefits are not solely being felt by union members, however. Several non-union automakers granted their workers raises in the wake of the UAW's contract with the big three automakers. We talked about that. As soon as that contract passed, well, they were fearing, oh my God, they're going to come over here and organize. We better give them a raise. And that's exactly what they did, but that's not stopping Sean Fain. He's still trying to organize. There's about 13 non-union plants in the South. By the way, the AFL-CIO summed up all that data, and they tweeted out, when we fight together, it pays off, literally. Over 500,000 Californian workers will see an increase in their hourly wage this week. Fast food workers in the state now being paid at least $20 an hour in accordance with a law passed last fall. The law passed as a result of negotiations between labor unions, fast food corporations, and fast food franchise owner trade associations. Now, the unions agreed to cease efforts to hold corporations accountable for the misdeeds of independent franchise operators, and the corporations agreed to remove a referendum related to workers' wages from the ballot, which would be on the November ballot this year. The franchise owners' trade associations initially supported the law, but have since complained about the impact of the new wage that it'll have on them. The owners of the franchises claim they will have to cut workers' hours, raise prices, and potentially even close branches as a result of the wage hike. Now, mind you, California's minimum wage currently, $16 an hour, nearly double what it was a decade ago. Keep in mind, this is California. Cost of living much higher there. Labor economists have shown that the decade-long wage increases did not cause a decline in employment or overall pay. But still, many chains have indicated plans to shorten business hours. So that's one to watch in the state of California. And California sets the pace for other states as well. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Tim Berger on behalf of the Ohio AFL-CIO.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you could find more at teamster.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You could find more at ifpte.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome a longtime regular to the show. That would be Tim Berga on behalf of the Ohio AFL-CIO. OhioAFLCIO.org is a website. And Tim serves as president, and he's busy leading the drive, Citizens Not Politicians, collecting signatures, that and many things that he does in the office of the Ohio AFL-CIO. Tim, welcome back to the show. Why don't you give us an update here on where we are? I know we're collecting signatures, and this would put an end, hopefully put an end. I know we've tried this before, but this one seems pretty solid. Put an end to a gerrymandering in the state of Ohio. Tim, it's all yours, brother. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Flash. We can't trust politicians to enact the laws that are even passed sometimes. We've seen that with the legislative map drawing process. We saw the Ohio Supreme Court, Democrats and Republicans on the Supreme Court, seven times reject the state legislative and congressional maps because the politicians in the state house who were drawing the maps didn't want to adhere to what the voters had actually passed back in 2015 and 2018. So we're going to take it out of their hands, Flash. It's going to be an independent commission that draws the legislative maps. And we need to get 415,000 valid signatures by the 4th of July. And we're well on our way to get there. If your listeners would go to unionstrongohio.com, they can read up on the issue and find where they can sign a petition near them. But the crux of this is get the politicians out of the map-making process so we don't have these lopsided legislatures, right, where Ohio is close to a 50-50 state partisan-wise, but you've got these super majorities in the House and in the Senate and our congressional delegation. And what happens as a result of that, we'll just go back 1 year and see what happens. They try to take away our constitutional rights for ballot initiative, if you remember, in that August special election, and voters stood up and said no. And then abortion rights was on the ballot in November. And the voters in Ohio said, we don't want these extreme abortion measures. So whether you're Democrat, Republican, Independent, it's about leveling the playing field and get fair and balanced districts out. And why is that important for organized labor? When you have fair and balanced legislative districts, you have competitive races. And when you have competitive races, issues that affect working people tend to fare better. We don't have right to work. We protect prevailing wage in Ohio. We protect collective bargaining rights in Ohio, minimum wage, unemployment compensation, injured worker compensation. That's what this is about, Flash. So please sign a petition near you.
You can also go to the website citizensnotpoliticians.org. citizensnotpoliticians.org, and the one that Tim was talking about, that's linked up to the Ohio AFL-CIO, unionstrongohio.com, unionstrongohio.com. You said we're well on our way. I mean, it's the 2nd of April right now, so we got a couple of months. You mentioned July 4th. You feel pretty confident we're going to get enough signatures then?
Well, it's a high bar to reach. Because you not only have to get the bulk signatures statewide, 415,000 signatures approximately, valid signatures, and sometimes a signature may get thrown out because somebody forgot to put in their address or their zip code or something like that. And then you have to reach the threshold in half of the 88 counties. So in 44 counties, you also have to have a minimum requirement. So it's not an easy thing to do. And it only happens when there's a real urgency of the electorate, and we're seeing that and we're feeling that. So as difficult as it is, I'm confident that we're going to get there.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of people during the recent primary a couple of weeks ago circulating petitions. Did you have any data on that? Did that work pretty well? How did we do during that time, Tim?
Well, the reason why it makes sense to go to a near a polling location on election day is everybody that's coming there is a registered voter. And you have to be a registered voter to sign these petitions. And the petitions are county specific. So you can't take a petition from Cuyahoga County and circulate that and then start circulating it in Lake County. You have to have separate petitions for that. So you've got all these voters in one location that are registered to voters in that county. So that does make sense. And I know that we were out there getting signatures on March 19th, primary day.
Yeah, I saw a lot of them during that day. So that's good. Good. Let's move on to the legislature here. And I saw this story. Apparently, we got a supermajority, but not too many things are getting done. In a way, that might be good because you just mentioned right to work. We don't want that being introduced, but since the beginning of the legislative session, which was last year, 2023, Ohio passed 19 bills. Now, we're way down. We're way down. Normally, during a two-year period, it's like 230. So Tim, I got to ask you, what's going on or what's not going on in the city of Columbus?
Yeah, again, it's a product of the gerrymandering and the dysfunction that's happening because you've got these extreme elements that are pushing up against more moderate elements and even liberal elements. And you'll have that even within the Republican majority party. So that's the reason for a historically low level of bills getting passed. So as you had indicated, when you look at the recent record, although we've supported some things like the transportation budget bill in the state and other matters, and we do working, you know, we have friends on both sides of the aisle. When you look at the anti-worker extreme proposals that get submitted, it's probably not a bad thing that we're having a slowdown in our General Assembly. That's why we need this redistricting amendment to take politicians out of the map-making process, get back to some functionality again, remove the extremism. We're the primary elections. seem to matter more than the general elections. And let's get back to governing for the majority of the people in the state. And that's the state of the play right now. I would expect the remaining part of the rest of the year, this legislative session, not much is going to get done. The capital appropriations bill, where projects get funded for, you know, counties and towns throughout the state, I think that's the priority piece of legislation that I expect to move and we'll be involved in. Outside of that, Flash, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot going on.
This could be one of the least productive sessions ever in the modern history of the State House, according to some academics that have been watching this. This is one to watch. And it, you know what? It's very similar to what's happening in Washington with our Congress. I mean, at least productive, I think, since the Great Depression. And that is the political divide in America. And it's almost like some lawmakers are holding legislation hostage right now. So it's definitely one to watch. And that's why we need you to be involved in the process of elections. Make sure you're registered to vote. And that's the only way you're going to get things change. One more issue here. Speaking of just that, the labor political agenda, I know you're working on that, and it's important to get the right people, endorse the right people, the one that support workers, and also get union brothers and sisters involved in politics. I know you did a great job in the last couple of years. Tim, where do we stand on that right now?
Well, you're right, and the political program is in the building stages for the general election this year. We get involved in politics for the policy, as you know, and we talk about on the show, policies that help working people. So we support those in politics that support us. It's that simple. Support trade unions and support working people. We've already endorsed our executive board, Sherrod Brown, for U.S. Senate. Our executive board meets later today to take up key state legislative and congressional races. So next time I'm with you, Flash, we'll talk about those endorsements. So we're putting the structural pieces of the program together, and we're ready to start moving it. Most likely start going to the doors and the workplaces and doing the mail and all sorts of outreach to union members around the state after the 4th of July recess.
And just to be clear, I asked this question to Pat Gallagher yesterday, the North Coast Labor Federation. Party affiliation really doesn't matter. It's how you stand on working class issues, how you stand on raising wages, how you stand on Social Security, how you stand, well, you know, depending on what office you're running for. But those kind of issues, unemployment compensation, things of that nature, that's pretty much how you view this, right, Tim?
That's right. And we have a detailed process on how we do our endorsements. It's constitutionally driven. It's rule driven. And it requires our executive board and our labor councils to be very engaged at all levels. And that starts at the local elections all the way up to the U.S. Senate. The one office that the National AFL-CIO has authority over making the endorsement is for the office of the president. The Ohio AFL-CIO does all the congressional endorsements for labor. The state legislative, the appellate court, the state executive offices, the Supreme Court offices, and then our local AFL-CIOs, our local labor councils, make all the local endorsements. But it's rules-driven, it's constitutional-driven, with the input and support and buy-in from our members. And again, we look at the record. Mm-hmm. What's your record? What are your policy positions? What do you stand for? And that's if you're with us, then, you know, we're with you. And that's really the long and the short of it. And, you know, we have good relationships on both sides of the political aisle, and we're going to continue to do that.
Well said. All right. Tim Berga, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. Website is ohioaflcio.org. Also, for that petition drive, citizens, not politicians, unionstrongohio.com, unionstrongohio.com. Tim, you take care, my brother. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. John Schloss heads the News Guild, and there's a big concern in America about artificial intelligence. He's going to talk about that next, right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form, and a Local 50 representative will call to begin the process. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Before we get to a John Schloss, I just want to announce that United Parcel Service, UPS, announced yesterday they've been awarded a significant air cargo contract by the United States Postal Service. This award is effective immediately and greatly expands the existing relationship between the two organizations. So following a transition period, UPS will become the Postal Service's primary air cargo provider and move the majority of Postal Service air cargo in the country. They got a pretty good relationship, and they just enhanced it. And I think this is pretty significant because when it comes to UPS versus FedEx, FedEx does a lot of that. UPS is way more labor-friendly than FedEx. So this is definitely good for the Teamsters. They have the airline division. So they got to be jumping up and down on this one. All right, let's go to line number two and join John Schloss, who is head of the News Guild. He's been president for 5 years right now. And he's going to talk about artificial intelligence and some legislation. But before we get to that, John, well, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today. You and I, every time we've been talking here for the last couple of months, there's a lot of media types going on strike and organizing, too. You've been doing a great job on organizing. We can get some numbers on that updated. But we've got some people that have organized and have gone on strike before they even have a done deal. Tell me what's going on here, John. Go ahead.
Well, I think that, you know, there's just an energy that workers are not going to be pushed around by bosses, even if they're not, like, in a union for a long period of time. We've had, you know, 26 strikes in the News Guild so far in 2024. That's quite a lot. We've had two so far this year where workers in nonprofit newsrooms, one in San Antonio, and now currently in Long Beach, California, where the workers have gone public with their demands to form a union, have asked the employer, again, both nonprofits, to give them voluntary recognition, meaning they don't have to go to an NLRB-controlled election because the supermajority have already said they want to be in a union. And then the employer, in both cases, different employers, has laid off people, and the workers immediately stood up and walked out and went on strike over that behavior. And so right now, the folks at the Long Beach Post, which is a small nonprofit newsroom in California, have been on strike for almost 2 weeks, demanding voluntary recognition, demanding a more equitable treatment of their colleagues that the nonprofit has laid off. And folks can find them by Googling LBM Guild or just looking for LBM Guild on Twitter.
And the other one is in San Antonio. What's the name of that paper there?
It's the San Antonio Report. And that one was pretty wild. They went public. The employer laid off one of their colleagues. They unanimously all went on strike for a day. And then about 2 days later, the employer, the nonprofit, was like, okay, yeah, you can have your union. We'll start bargaining now. I was like, that's the right move. That's the good move.
Wow. And while we're talking about media here, Pittsburgh Post Gazette on strike since October of 2022. Any movement on that, John?
Yeah, 17 months. No, unfortunately not. The employer is just hell-bent on using scab labor, which is just like a joke. The other day, the newspaper didn't even have a local story on the front page because they don't have any decent human beings that work there. It's all just scab labor. But the employer is refusing to move. We're asking for affordable health insurance and for the employer to follow federal law. A federal judge has ordered that too, and they're just refusing still.
Unbelievable. A local paper without a local story on the front page. Happening in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Wow. All right, let's talk about artificial intelligence. And I was reading earlier this story about the number of unions, yours included, News Guild, CWA, the Writers Guild of America East, Writers Guild of America West, and also NABET, which is the National Association of Broadcast Employees and Technicians, all getting together. Very, very concerned about artificial intelligence, and you signed off on a letter to Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader. All right, John, this is all yours. What's in the letter, and where do we stand with legislation on this?
Yeah, so, really I'm quite fond of these other unions. They're in a lot of similar spaces, and they're dealing, they represent a lot of creative workers who are getting hit with artificial intelligence really quickly. We have seen a lot of companies try and implement, I'm talking about places like Gannett, but others, and Gizmodo for the Writers Guild. They're trying to implement artificial intelligence to do things like just crank out fake news stories or fake reviews or take like the high school sports stats and then write a couple paragraphs into something that basically is gibberish online, is factually incorrect, and completely destroys the reputation of the brand. If you're talking about Gannett, I mean, this is more than 200 local newspaper brands across the country. So we've got some serious concerns, the four of us, four unions, because we are seeing companies try to use artificial intelligence to replace workers. In fact, Gannett in particular, I'm going to point out, is one that at the bargaining table wants to have the full right and authority to replace journalists with artificial intelligence, which is a joke, because artificial intelligence can't go into a courtroom and discover like what is the most important part of a trial. They can't talk to grieving parents who just lost their child. And in a school shooting. They can't try and generate the trust and cultivate the trust of a whistleblower, and they can't go to a war and cover things from a hospital in Gaza. So journalists can't really, really be placed at all by artificial intelligence. Now, there are some pieces and some components that can be helpful as tools. And, journalists have been using tools and computers and software. I'm a software programmer myself, computer programmer myself, and we can use it to advance our skills and our tools, but we're really concerned about this. So we wrote to the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, asking him and encouraging him to make sure that journalists and other creative professionals were at the forefront of any recommendations that he has going out to the different committees on the Senate. There's been a bipartisan effort over there to try and like hear from different folks across different unions and industries. But we have a lot of concerns. The other aspect I'd just say really quickly is that artificial intelligence training models. So think about OpenAI, ChatGPT. Microsoft is a huge investor there, but Google is also doing this as well. Those companies are vacuuming up all of these news articles that are written by working class people, and they're not being compensated for it. So Google is ingesting thousands and thousands of news articles to then turn around and train their artificial intelligence, large language model algorithms, to then be able to spit out these fake news stories or something that looks like it, but they're not compensating the company and they're not compensating the journalist.
Now, is this something we can legislate? Let's pick up on that, what you just said. If they steal somebody's work and you can confirm that it's stolen, will you be able to charge them? I mean, are we going in that direction with this legislation?
It's possible. You know, there's already been legislation called the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act that's been introduced now for about 3 years that would basically give news companies the rights to go after Google and Facebook and other large tech companies to be compensated for, benefiting off of the ads they sell alongside like the Google results, you know, or on the Facebook page, the ads that are appearing next to articles that are placed there. There's a huge benefit for these companies having news content. So that bill is out there. We've been actively and aggressively pushing to make sure that the legislation compensates journalists and is transparent so that American people know how much money is going from Google to, say, the Seattle Times or the Columbus Dispatch. We want to know exactly what that is and how that's invested. So that's a possibility, but we can also just ensure and protect the bargaining rights of employees. You know, you already in the private sector have a mandatory right to bargain over how artificial intelligence or systems using AI operate and being able to get data about it, how they would affect performance reviews of employees, how it could potentially affect speed ups, the protection of your jurisdiction and work to make sure that you're not being replaced by technology. These are all things that you can do at the bargaining table and then things you can actually organize around and potentially go on strike for if you're not even getting. Mm-hmm. So we want that. And then, we want to make sure that like we want to protect the likeness and voice and performance of these types of workers.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened with SAG-AFTRA's talks, because they were getting ripped off by so many producers, film producers. So we're talking, I mean, this is all about protection of journalists, protection of film and TV writers, creative workers, because artificial intelligence, I mean, this is a runaway freight train right now. So this letter, just to be clear, this letter went to Chuck Schumer. No response yet. I mean, there's a lot going on right now, but this is something that I'm sure you'll be actively pursuing and staying on, correct?
Yeah, we will. I mean, a few months ago, I was invited by the Senate Majority Leader to testify among folks from SAG-AFTRA and alongside the big lobbyists for the news publishers and the broadcasters. Weirdly enough, we weren't really disagreeing at this point on this issue because we're like, AI can't be used to replace journalists and we have concerns about these big companies. But yeah, we're going to continue to advocate and make sure we protect America's journalists so that American democracy is protected.
Absolutely. John Schloss, president of the News Guild. John, always a pleasure. Keep up the fight, my brother, and stay in touch, okay?
Will do. Thanks so much for having me.
You got it. John Schloss. You can check him out at thenewsguild.org. Quick break. Dave Jamieson, the labor reporter at the Huffington Post. He's got a lot of stories to share, and he'll be coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is presented by the Labor's International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, UL Agency. .org is your website. Let's go to line number 3 and welcome back to the show, Dave Jamieson. He is a labor reporter for the Huffington Post, or better known as the Huff Post. And he is also a member of the Writers Guild, one of the unions we were talking about with John Schloss, that sent a letter to Chuck Schumer dealing with protections for journalists because of artificial intelligence. Dave, you got a number of stories. I want to talk about this Waffle House story, but you're in the middle of all of this. Artificial intelligence at the Huff Post. What are we seeing right now, Dave?
Well, our company, BuzzFeed, has talked a bit about, harnessing AI. It kind of remains to be seen how all that shakes out and what it means for those of us who work there. Obviously it's a big concern through the whole industry. One thing I've seen is these kind of sketchy looking sites, news sites you never heard of that, are running what looks to be something you just reported, and it's been kind of like regurgitated through artificial intelligence. So it's a wild west out there, obviously, right now. And, a lot of people are understandably concerned about, what this is going to mean for original reporting that we do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you said it's a wild, wild west. We got to harness this right away before it becomes a runaway freight train, and it's close to that right now. All right, Waffle House. There's a union trying to organize Waffle House workers, and they have filed a petition with the Labor Department asking federal officials to investigate their policy of deducting mandatory meal costs from the paychecks, even if you don't eat. Dave, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah, this is a Waffle House policy. It's, typically $3 deducted from your paycheck. for a meal, an on-shift meal that you're, you know, supposedly entitled to. A couple problems here. One, workers, a lot of workers say that they don't have time to take the break and eat the meal. That's one issue. Another is maybe you don't want to eat Waffle House every day if you work at Waffle House, right?
Right.
Food's kind of rich. I mean, I love me some Waffle House once in a while. Don't know that I'd want it 5 to 7 days a week. So workers have petitioned to make this optional. You know, I was talking with a worker down in Georgia who's leading the charge on this, and she was saying, look, it should be opt in. She's saying I lose, you know, 15 to 20 bucks a week deducted out of my check, and I almost never eat the meal. She says she doesn't have time. She's a server. It's very busy. She often doesn't take breaks. She eats at home before she comes in. She doesn't want the meal, so why am I paying for it? So now it's interesting under the law, you know, employers, you can do meal deductions like this, but it has to be, you know, what's considered fair value, right? Like the company can't turn a profit on the meal, right? So $3 is below menu cost, right? Maybe that sounds like a decent deal. However, that's very expensive if you're not eating the food. And right. So what workers are saying is that's, we're having $3 deducted for a meal that's not being eaten, and then the company is turning around and selling that same meal to somebody sitting up at the diner. So that's the problem they have with it, and I think you know a bunch of workers at this Waffle House in Conyers, Georgia went on strike over this last week, and I covered that, and they sort of drew a lot of attention to what I think is a really interesting issue. And Waffle House hasn't said really much of anything publicly about this policy or why they do it or why they're sticking by it.
We should point out that this petition comes from the Union of Southern Service Workers, which is affiliated. It's a new branch of SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. That was formed last year out of the Fight for 15 campaign, which is now Fight for 20 and Fight for 2025, or 25, not 2025. But it's interesting to see what's going on here. It seems to me, I mean, if you're taking money like that, that's borderline illegal, and probably that's where the Labor Department's going to go on this. Any thoughts
on
that?
That's what the Service Workers Union wants the Labor Department to investigate this. And basically to find out if Waffle House is overcharging. An interesting factor here is the worker I interviewed, her name Cindy Smith. She's a server, and so she's making the sub-minimum wage, right? You can, in this country, you can pay a worker directly as little as $2.13 an hour under federal law. They're paid a little more than that down there. I think Cindy said she's getting like $2.80 something an hour directly from Waffle House with tips supposed to make up the rest of the difference to reach the minimum wage. So she's essentially, you do the math on that. You work 30 to 40 hours a week. You're only getting $2 and change per hour directly from the company. You're basically surviving on tips. And so having $3 a day deducted out is meaningful. I mean, that's obviously right there. That's an hour, more than an hour of direct wages from the company. So she was saying, like, this isn't, it may sound like pocket change, but it's significant money to her. And so, what the union is asking is that the Labor Department look into this to see whether Waffle House is following the letter of the law or not, and find out what these meals are really worth if they're being turned down by employees and then sold to customers.
Let's see what they have to say. We have a pretty aggressive Labor Department, so I'm sure they're on this one. All right, I want to jump to Georgia. Georgia State Legislature recently passed a bill that would bar companies from receiving state subsidies if they voluntarily recognize a union through card check. Dave, this is mind-boggling here because it's just another attack on unions. And I'm just wanting to, this bill has gone to the governor. I don't know where we stand on this issue. Maybe you can give us some more details on it.
Yeah, you kind of wonder what they'll dream up next. So, like you said, this is essentially legislation that strips state development subsidies from a company that voluntarily recognized a union. So what that means is a company will have to force a secret ballot election. If workers petition for a union, they say, look, you know, we have union cards from 70% of the workers here. That is normally an opportunity, if a company wants to say, okay, like, you clearly have the numbers. We don't need to do an election. We'll bargain a contract. Here, what Georgia is saying is, no, you cannot do that. You must require them to hold a secret ballot election. And so it adds another step for unionization. And, of course, an election opens up an opportunity for a lot of, you know, union busting, frankly, and people being pressured to vote against the union. It can make it sort of a more laborious process, and it could drag it out too. So, what Georgia is doing is they're going to strip development subsidies, economic subsidies, if you go that route and voluntarily recognize the union. The governor, Brian Kemp, Republican, he was on board with this from the beginning. You know, he stumped for this legislation in front of the Chamber of Commerce. So I don't believe he's signed it yet, but that appears likely that he will do that. And this all is part of, it's a similar bill even just a few days ago popped up in Alabama, I believe. Tennessee passed one a year ago. So this is something being pushed out there in GOP states by ALEC, the conservative group that sort of, spearheads a lot of state-level conservative and anti-union legislation. So, you know, people question the legality of this because it could be preempted by federal labor law. I was talking with a labor law professor at Harvard who doesn't think this would fly if it's challenged in federal court. So that remains to be seen, kind of how that shakes out. But this is kind of the sort of policies that conservative groups are pursuing right now. I think they see a lot of union organizing going on, some, you know, maybe kind of a strong moment here for the labor movement. And so they see this as a good time to push this kind of stuff to curb union power.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially with the UAW organizing in the South there. They're figuring they're going to throw everything against the wall and see what sticks. But, yeah, ALEC's been around a long time. That's the American Legislative Exchange Council, headed by the Koch brothers. I know one of them has passed away. But they were the authors of a lot of the bills in Wisconsin and state of Ohio attacking collective bargaining rights over the years. We should point out, I see you got Liz Shuler commenting in your article. Liz, of course, president of the AFL-CIO. She called the bill appalling, saying that it attacks the fundamental freedoms of both workers and employers. And she also said that it violates long-held precedent under the National Labor Relations Act. So to your point, we may see some challenges, and there should be challenges on this. I mean, let workers decide if they want to go to the union, that's fine. I mean, why put another roadblock there? It's crazy.
I wonder, you know, practically speaking, how much of an impact this would have. I don't know how often employers in Georgia do voluntarily recognize a union, but there are cases where unions like the United Auto Workers or like Unite Here, where they get it in their contracts, right, that if an employer is going to open a new work site somewhere, that there should be a card check there and that sort of thing. So if these laws survive, I mean, I do think there would be conflict with stuff like that, and it could create problems for unions.
Well, Dave, we're going to leave it on that note. Dave Jamieson, labor reporter for the Huffington Post, or better known as the Huff Post. Appreciate what you bring to the table. Keep up the great work, okay, buddy?
Thanks for having me, Flash.
All right, that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Ohio State Building Trades and the president of Plumbers Local 55. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.